ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय रूपं यतत्प्राहुरव्याक्तमाद्यां ब्रह्मा ज्योतिर्निर्गुणं निर्विकारम् सतामत्रं निर्विशेषं निलीहं सत्वं सक्षाद् विष्णुरत्यात्मदीपा.
Sri Devaki said, My dear Lord, there are different Vedas, some of which describe you as unperceivable through words and the mind. Yet you are the origin of the entire cosmic manifestation. You are Brahman, the greatest of everything, full of effulgence like the sun. You have no material cause. You are free from change and deviation, and you have no material desires. Thus, the Vedas say that you are the substance. Therefore, my Lord, you are directly the origin of all Vedic statements, and by understanding you, one gradually understands everything. You are different from the light of Brahman and Paramatma, yet you are not different from them. Everything emanates from you. Indeed, you are the cause of all causes, Lord Vishnu, the light of all transcendental knowledge. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Vishnu is the origin of everything, and there is no difference between Lord Vishnu and Lord Krishna, because both of them are Vishnu Tattva. From the Rig Veda we understand, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam. The original substance is the all-pervading Lord Vishnu, who is also Paramatma and the effulgent Brahman. The living entities are also part and parcel of Vishnu, who has various energies. Parasya Shaktir Vipadai Vishruyate Subhaviki Jnana Bala Kriya Cha. Vishnu or Krishna is therefore everything. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam prabhartate. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. Krishna therefore is the original cause of everything. Sarva karana karanam. When Vishnu expands in his all-pervading aspect, we should understand him to be the Nirakara Nirvishesh Brahma Jyoti. Although everything emanates from Krishna, he is ultimately a person. Aham Adir Hidevanam. He is the origin of Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwar, and from them many other demigods are manifested. Krishna therefore says in Bhagavad Gita, Brahmano hi pratishtaham, Brahman rests upon me. The Lord also says, Yepye yanya devata bhakta yajante shvadhyanvita, Tepi mam evakondhaya yajanti avidhi purvakam. Whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone, but it is offered without true understanding. There are many persons who worship different demigods, considering all of them to be separate gods, which in fact they are not. The fact is that every demigod and every living entity is part and parcel of Krishna. Mamayavam so jivaloke jivabhuta. The demigods are also in the category of living entities. They are not separate gods, but men whose knowledge is immature and contaminated by the modes of material nature worship various demigods according to their intelligence. Therefore, they are rebuked in Bhagavad Gita, Kama ista ister hriti jnana prapadyante nyate bhata. Krishna Vishnu is actually the origin of everything. As stated in the Vedas, yasya bhasa sarvam idam vibhati. The absolute truth is described later in the Srimad Bhagavatam as satyam jnanam anantam yad brahma jyoti sanatanam. The brahma jyoti is sanatan, eternal. Yet it is dependent on Krishna, brahmano hi pratishtaham. The Brahma Samhita states that the Lord is all-pervading. Andantarastha paramanu chayantarastham. He is within this universe, and he is within the atom as Paramatma. Yasya prabha prabhavato jagaranta koti kotishva shesha vishuddhadi vibhuti vinam. Brahman is also not independent of him. Therefore, whatever a philosopher may describe is ultimately Krishna or Vishnu. Sarvam kaludhi sarvam kalvidam brahma param brahma param dhamma pavitram paramam bhavam. According to different phases of understanding, Lord Vishnu is differently described, but in fact he is the origin of everything. Because Devaki was an unalloyed devotee, she could understand that the same Lord Vishnu had appeared as her son. Therefore, after the prayers of Vasudev, Devaki offered her prayers. She was very frightened because of her brother's atrocities. Devaki said, "My dear Lord, your eternal forms like Narayan, Lord Ram, Shesha, Varaha, Nirsingha, Vamana, Baladev, and millions of other similar incarnations emanating from Vishnu are described in the Vedic literatures as original. You are the original because all your forms as incarnations are outside of this material creation. Your form was existing before this cosmic manifestation was created. Your forms are eternal and all-pervading. They are self-effulgent, changeless, and uncontaminated by the material qualities. Such eternal forms are ever cognizant and full of bliss. They are situated in transcendental goodness and are always engaged in different pastimes. You are not limited to a particular form. All such transcendental eternal forms are self-sufficient. I can understand that you are the Supreme Lord Vishnu. We may conclude, therefore, that Lord Vishnu is everything, although he is also different from everything. This is the Achintya Veda Veda Tattva philosophy." Sri Devaki said, "My dear Lord, there are different Vedas, some of which describe you as imperceivable through words and mind, yet you are the origin of the entire cosmic manifestation. You are Brahman, the greatest of everything, full of effulgence like the sun. You have no material cause. You are free from change and deviation, and you have no material desires. Thus the Vedas say that you are the substance. Therefore, my Lord, you are directly the origin of all Vedic statements. And by understanding you, one gradually understands everything. You are different from the light of Brahman and Paramatma, yet you are not different from them. Everything emanates from you. Indeed, you are the cause of all causes, Lord Vishnu, the light of all transcendental knowledge." Om Agyan Timirandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guru Venama. This chapter 3 from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we find the appearance of Lord Sri Krishna. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo beti tatvata. Krishna explains in Gita that one who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities never takes birth in this material world. how Krishna is appearing is something that is unique to the personality of Godhead himself when he appears in this world. When we were in the holy land of Sri Kurukshetra Dham, we were giving one discourse in the Kurukshetra University. And attending were all very high-class scholars and very sincere studies, students of the Vedas. And there was a question that why should we take so seriously the authority of Bhagavad Gita when we find that the speaker of Bhagavad Gita could not even follow the basic principles of human morality? Krishna is known as a thief. Krishna practiced polygamy. He had so many thousands of wives. And before that, he was secretly in the nights on the banks of the Jamuna in the Vrindavan forests. He was meeting with other women, sometimes with other men's wives. An acharya is one who teaches by example. So this Bhagavad Gita, is it really to be taken as an authority when it is spoken by such a personality? And factually, one of the most famous of all commentators of the Bhagavad Gita, perhaps more than anyone else worldwide, besides Srila Prabhupada and one or two others, this person's Bhagavad Gita is most well read, his commentary. And this person is famous throughout the world, and especially in India, as one of the greatest saints who's adored and respected. And he explains, he made it quite known in his writings, as well as in his personal dialogues. So, although I read Bhagavad Gita every morning and every evening, although I get great refuge in these divine words, I cannot accept that it is historical. I must accept that some great sages have written it and created a fictitious personality named Krishna for the purpose of just using this medium to present the absolute truth, the highest truth. Why? You believe in the other incarnations of God, do you not? Yes, yes, God could do anything. I believe in Ram. I believe in so many, but not Krishna. He could not have existed. Why? Because if God would have come to this world, he would not have acted immorally. And if God would have come to this world, he would have not induced Arjuna to violence. Therefore, I cannot accept any historical validity to the life of Krishna. Of course, Krishna, in his own words, explains in the Bhagavad Gita, avajananti mam mudha manusintaram ashrita param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Fools deride me when I descend in my human form. They take me to be ordinary. They do not understand my supreme dominion over all but me and my completely transcendental position. Krishna is the absolute truth. In Gita, Krishna explains, matta parataram nanyat kinchit asti dananjaya, that there is no truth superior to me. Everything is resting upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. And Bhagavatam describes in the first chapter, first verse, Satyam Param Dhimahi Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, that this son of Vasudev who has appeared, I meditate upon him because he is the supreme truth. Tribir Gunamayara Bhavaya. Krishna says, I am above, beyond the three modes of material nature. And he wanted to establish it from the very beginning of his advent. We know how children are born into this world. So much pain, so much suffering by the mother, and even more by the child. People feel so much sorry for the mother when she's giving birth, but the child is going through far more pain and tribulation. The only difference is the mother can tell everyone how she's suffering, but the child, all he can do is cry, and that's exactly what he does. And it's not a very hygienic situation, birth of any creature in this world. It's full of pain. It's full of all sorts of problems and difficulties, potential complications. But how did Krishna appear? In a completely transcendental manner. When he was within the womb of Devaki, the conception was divine. It is described that there was no intercourse as we know it. But Krishna simply appeared within the heart of Vasudeva. From his heart he entered into his mind. From the mind of Vasudeva he was transferred to the mind of Devaki. From the mind of Devaki, he was transferred into her heart, and from the heart into her womb. This is the divine conception. And when Devaki was bearing the child, Sri Krishna, she was not suffering from labor pains like an ordinary woman. She became effulgent. She became literally Vaikuntha. She became the abode of God. She was effulgent, brilliant, and full of joy. You know, in the heavenly planets, the demigods, we read of what type of luxurious, opulent surroundings they are residing within. This earthly planet, especially in this age of Kali Yuga, in previous ages, this earthly planet was also full of great, great beauty. But in Kali Yuga, it is described the demigods practically will never come down to this earth planet. It's below their dignity. It's such a corrupt, filthy, and dirty place compared to where they're living. It used to be, even in Dwarpa Yuga and Treta Yuga, when people would perform sacrifices, behold, the yajñas, the demigods would all come personally, directly, for everyone to see and partake of their shares. But in this age of Kali Yuga, where do we find demigods coming to partake of their shares in the sacrifices? We have seen Brahmins chanting their mantras, performing their agnihotras and all these things. Have we seen any Brahmas or Indras or Vayus or Suryas coming down and saying, I will accept my portion? No. That is why these types of sacrifices are not recommended in the age of Kali. They're practically useless. The greatest use that they have is simply to maintain certain traditions. But the substance is when the reciprocation takes place by the higher powers. That is why it is said the only sacrifice recommended in the age of Kali Yuga is the chanting of the holy name, because Krishna is not different than his name, and when you chant his name, he does appear through the sound vibration itself. So, the demigods, they do not come to this world because they have such a better world to live in, such a beautiful, wonderful place. And we read about the types of sacrifices that were performed by the great kings in previous ages, such as the Rajasuya sacrifice. You had to be a multi-trillionaire to perform one of these sacrifices. You had to create such an environment that the demigods would want to come down. They would consider it better than their own abodes. But we don't have that kind of wealth. We don't have that kind of purity to chant their mantras. But when Devaki, who was just a simple woman living in a prison cell, in the darkness of a prison cell, while she was there, because Krishna was within her womb, her body became the kingdom of God, became the spiritual abode of the Lord. And therefore, her body became so beautiful, so illustrious, so effulgent, that all of the demigods, they all came in secret disguised forms into that prison cell simply to have darshan, to see the beauty of Devaki, and to worship the child within her womb. And this they did. And the demigods, although materialistic people, since time immemorial, are offering their prayers, the demigods themselves, with folded hands, are offering their loving, devoted prayers to the womb of Devaki. And through the 9 months of Devaki's pregnancy, it does not mention that she was having any difficulty. She didn't have to regularly see the doctors to make sure everything was all right. She didn't go through all sorts of anxieties like a woman generally does when they're pregnant. She was simply joyful, simply brilliant with light and love. And when it came, the auspicious moment when Krishna was to appear, how did he appear? In a most wonderful way. It's not that he was crammed through a small little part opening and coming out crying, with covered by all sorts of afterbirth and everything like that. Crying, weeping. When Krishna came out, he simply appeared from the inside out. He simply appeared in the sky above them. And he was decorated with beautiful garlands and beautiful jewels and beautiful crowns. And he appeared in his four-armed form of Narayan, holding the conch, the lotus, the chakra, and the gada, the club. In this way, he was so beautiful, casting his merciful glance upon his mother and father, Devaki and Vasudeva. Of course, we are not criticizing or saying there is anything wrong with the way Krishna has arranged for ordinary jivatmas to take birth in this world. Because it is Krishna's plan, it is also, we could see it as a very beautiful thing, how perfectly he has arranged everything for a soul to enter into this world and take birth. But we must understand the difference. When Krishna takes birth, it is something altogether different. Why did he do this? To show that even the greatest saints and sages, even the greatest paramhamsas, when they come into this world, they come through the regular process of birth. But when God himself comes, who is the master, the creator of material energy, he appears in the most wonderful way. Why? So that when he performs his divine lila, everyone will understand who he really is, if they so open their minds and hearts to want to understand. So, Krishna appeared, and of course, an ordinary child, how many months till he learns how to talk? First of all, how many months till the child learns how to walk? We don't have too many parents here, mostly brahmacharis, but Satchinandan, how many months to live? To walk or talk? Ah, very nice. So Krishna, the evening of his birth, not only did he walk, he flew. Huh? How many children, they cannot even crawl the first day. First they come out, then they just lay there helplessly for so many weeks. Then gradually they start crawling. Then after so many months, almost a year, they start walking with the help of their parents. Then after some time, they start to talk. When they start to talk, everyone thinks that they're chanting that person's name, right? That is, when the child says, the mother says, oh, he's saying my name. His first word was my name. And the father says, no, no, it was my name. And the brother says, no, no, it was my name. And the uncle says, no, no, it was my name. Usually it's none of their names. It's just some sound. But in this way, unintelligible talks. But Krishna, at the moment of his infancy, when he first came out of the womb, he levitated into the sky. And he spoke eloquent philosophy. He told Vasudeva and Devaki about their previous births and how they earned the right to become his parents in this verse. Previously, I have appeared as your child many times. In one birth, you were Kashyapa and Aditi, and I appeared as your son, Vamanadeva. In another birth, I appeared as your son, Prishnigarbh. Previously, you both performed great, great tapasya and austerities. What were the names? Sutapa? Prishni and Sutapa. Prishni and Sutapa. Previously in this life, you performed tens and thousands of years of austerities in the forest, where you were only eating the leaves that were falling from the trees. And you were constantly immersed in remembering me. And at that time, there was a divine revelation. And I appeared before you. And I asked, is there any benediction you would like? I will grant the fulfillment of any of your desires. Ah, my dear Lord, we are so attracted by your beautiful form. And as a husband and a wife, we have a natural inclination for children. So please, we would like if you were to become our child, born of our womb. So in this way, the Lord is appearing again and again to fulfill the desire of his devotees. So at this moment, Lord Sri Krishna is explaining all of this to Vasudeva and Devaki. And after hearing the beautiful words of Sri Krishna, Vasudeva and Devaki, they are praying to the Lord. And Devaki is explaining, although she is the mother, she fully recognizes his supreme position as the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead. She is explaining here that all the different Vedas are describing you and you alone. Some describe you as the impersonal Brahman, some as the all-pervading Paramatma, but you, the personality of Godhead, Narayan, is the source of all of the various goals of the Vedas and the Rishis and the saints. You are the origin of the entire cosmic manifestation. Everything is emanating from you. You are the Brahman. You are the greatest of everything. You are full of effulgence like the sun. My dear Lord, Devaki, who is the mother, she is confirming that you have no material cause. You are not born because of Vasudeva and myself. Simply by your own independent free will, you have appeared out of your mercy from my womb. You are free from change and deviation. Everything in this world is in a constant flux of change. There are six transformations that every living being must endure. First one is born, then one grows for some time, then there is some duration, the production of offspring, then there is dwindling and ultimately death. And nobody can avoid these six transformations, however powerful and great they may be. But Krishna, you are transcendental, satchit ananda vigraha. For you, there is no change. You are not under the laws of karma. You are not under the laws of time. It is a fact. When we become old, we are old. We cannot stop for very long the aging process. Mystic yogis can do it for some time, but ultimately they are also devoured by the power of time. Srila Prabhupada would tell us that when Krishna was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was approximately 120 years old. And yet, he never looked like he was older than a 16-year-old youth. And when Krishna was just born, he was an infant child. The great demoness, Putana, when she came to kill him, he revealed his super excellent power of killing her. She was more powerful than 10,000 men. She was a monstrous Rakshasi. There is absolutely no one in this entire world today that even has 1/1,000th the strength and power of Putana. She could make her size something gigantic. She could reduce it to something very young, slender, and beautiful. She had such power, such mystic potencies. Such Shakti. No one has this power today. And yet, Krishna effortlessly killed her when he was an infant little child. And he took this form of an infant little child on the request of Devaki. When he went to Vrindavan, he revealed the whole Brahmanda, the entire universe, from the mouth of his small body. When he was 7 years old, he lifted the Govardhan Hill, which is a huge mountain. It takes all day to walk around it. Krishna held it with the most insignificant, weakest part of a human's body, the little finger of his left hand, for 7 days. This is Krishna. And when Krishna expanded himself to marry 16,108 wives, he was able to live with each and every one of them simultaneously. Can anyone do this? This is God. This is Krishna. So when Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita, what gives that Bhagavad Gita the highest supreme authority is that it is spoken historically by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna himself. Unless we understand Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada tells us in regard to this particular commentator of the Gita, he said he was very scholarly, he was very moral, he was very advanced in many ways, but because he did not accept his information by inquiring submissively from a bona fide disciplic line and a bona fide spiritual master, his ideas were all his own concoctions. We must first understand who is Krishna before we could truly understand the teachings of the Gita. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhagavad means God. Bhagavad Gita is the song of the absolute truth, the reservoir of all opulence. That is Krishna. So Devaki, she is prophesizing in one sense from the very moment of Krishna's advent in this world, the greatness that he will reveal to the world. She is putting on the record, from the very moment Krishna has appeared, we have seen he is the Supreme Godhead. God never has to become God. This is another unfortunate idea that many philosophers are teaching, that you are God and I am God. Everything is God. If I'm God, then why am I suffering? Why am I growing old? Why do I get diseased? Why so many people overcome me with their terrible activities? Why physical and mental pain comes upon me? If I'm God, the supreme controller of all controllers, why do I not always get my way? And you're calling me God. Yes, of course, I want to be God. I want to believe you. I want to surrender to you and become God. But why, if I'm God, I'm like this? Because you have to become God. You are God, but you just have forgotten. By practicing my meditation, by taking this mantra, by performing this tapasya, by giving me some donation, you will become God. Very good. But Krishna is not that type of God. And Devaki wanted to tell everybody what type of God Krishna is from the very beginning. That at the very moment of his birth, he was God. This is his leela. Srila Prabhupada really condemns the idea when materialistic people think that their activities are leela. That yes, I am God, but now I'm in this world and so many problems are taking place. But actually, this is all just my leela. You've heard this in India. Everyone is saying like this. Such cheap nonsense. Yes, yes, I got divorced, but this is my leela. And I have AIDS or cancer, but this is my leela. But what kind of leela? Krishna's leela was completely within the bounds of his own intentions. He was not subjected to anything. Abhigya Swarat, he's fully independent and all cognizant. This is Krishna. This is divine leela. God never becomes God. God is always God. And therefore, Krishna revealed himself in this way. But why? Is he an egomaniac that he just wants to show everybody that I'm the supreme? Some people think like that. God is such an egomaniac. He's asking us to be humble servants, but why doesn't he become a humble servant? He's ordering all of us, you should just be the servant of the servant of the servant. But when he comes, he appears like the supreme Godhead. Why is this? He is not doing it because he needs our attention, or he needs our praise. He appears in this most wonderful divine transcendental way because we need to understand in truth who he is. He appears for our benefit. He has no purpose to fulfill, no desires to aspire for in this material world. He appears in this world only for the sake of attracting the conditioned souls back to him. Why? For the eternal glory and pleasure of us. Krishna is appearing. Therefore, by hearing these transcendental pastimes, hearing them from the authoritative source of those who are truly dedicating their lives in the service of the Lord, hearing submissively, then the true realization, not only understanding, but the realization of Krishna's infinite nature and his divine love is awakened within our hearts. Just as Krishna took birth 5,000 years ago in the prison of Kamsa, our hearts in many ways are like a prison. Are they not? In the liberated state, our heart is not a prison. But in the present situation, our heart is like a prison. And the bars and the walls of that prison are all of our nefarious desires to selfishly lord it over material nature. That this prison of the heart doesn't need bars made of steel. But lust or kama, material desires, are the bars within this prison, and they are so powerful we have no desire to escape. The soul is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, but in the condition that we are in now, we have to suffer the threefold miseries and so many anxieties in this world. And the so-called pleasures, they never really satisfy us. We want out, but we can't get out. Because our heart has become a prison house. The soul is longing for freedom. But it is bound by the shackles, the bars, and the walls of material desires. So this is one of the great reasons that Krishna decided to appear in the prison. That even in the prison of our heart today, if we simply remember Krishna, if we simply hear his glories and chant his holy names, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, he will appear within the prison of our own heart. But there's also another very glorious understanding of this. Because Krishna is bound by love. He agrees to be the prisoner of those who love him and serve him with devotion. Krishna becomes the prisoner in the heart of the pure devotee by his own free will. He never leaves that heart. In this sense, the bars and the walls are those of pure love and devotion. And Krishna is so much overwhelmed and overcome by those bars of love and devotion that he cannot escape. Just like Bilvamangala Thakur, when he was in Vrindavan, he was a blind man. He was holding on to Sri Krishna. And when he learned that this is actually my Lord, Sri Krishna, he didn't want to let him go. And Krishna wanted to go away. And they were fighting in a very loving way. And finally Krishna escaped from his hand's grasp. And Bilvamangala Thakur, he said, my Lord, you may be able to get away from my hands, but you can never escape my heart. You can never go out of my heart. I have imprisoned you within my heart. Cannot escape. This is love. Sadavo hridayo mayam, sadavam hridayam tvam. The devotee always keeps Krishna imprisoned within his heart. And Krishna always keeps the devotee imprisoned within his heart. Prisoners of love. We are bound, we are shackled by the power of the love of our beloved. This is bhakti. And this is the process by which Krishna takes birth within our lives. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Ram Ram Ram. there any questions? Thank you very much.
In the heart, morning and evening. And then when we have to say that, let's speak words again. You already gave it in the heart.
Krishna never takes birth. In this world, his taking birth is actually simply his revealing himself. The sun does not take birth in the early morning. The sun simply reveals itself to our vision, but the sun is always existing. So Krishna is always existing within the heart of every living being. But the heart of a conditioned soul is like midnight. It is dark. Huh? Why? Because due to our independent will being misused, our false ego has covered Krishna. Although he's there, it's covered him. Factually, what is night? From a scientific, astronomical point of view, what is night? But why is there an absence of light? The sun is always there. But from what I've understood from many years ago in school, of course they may have changed their theories since I was in school. Science is very progressive.